She wants fire, and Dorn sent her mud. You can make a poultice out of mud to cool a fever. You can plant seeds in mud and grow a crop to feed your children. Mud would nourish you, where fire would only consume you. But fools and children and young girls would choose fire every time. Welcome to 2C1C, the Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CarGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
Getting friend zoned is hard. It's a rough time for anyone.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, look at him. He's getting drunk, hanging out with midgets.
I mean, and really, who doesn't want to do that, though? That sounds pretty good to me.
That sounds like a great time.
Alrighty, then.
Sounds like my average Saturday night.
Getting drunk, hanging out with midgets.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Welcome to Two Chimps and a Chum.
I need to spend less time in Springfield.
Less time? I think that's a sign you need
less
to spend
time.
More time.
Well, we'll have to see how that plays out. I just don't see dropping midgets being the way to go there.
Well, you know what is the way to go? Listening to everyone's favorite Game of Thrones podcast, Two Chimps and a Chum. Also known as this show. Seems like a good Saturday night to me.
It's a great Saturday night.
You need
for
to find you stuff to do. I mean, don't get me wrong.
What are you talking about?
Great. I just don't know if Saturday night is where. If I'm coherent enough to care about this show, I'm doing something wrong on my Saturday night.
I mean, all the celebs.
So Daryl does get way funnier 4 or 5 beers in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the more you drink, the funnier I get, which is great.
I'm going to go have a beer.
Hence the drunk.
This is how we're going down.
On CardGameDB.
That's right.
Can
it's
we
a great thread.
Live stream a drunk draft at some point?
Wow, that sounds like a brilliant idea. We need to find a way to make this happen.
Let's do it fucking live, and we'll ask like trivia questions. Whenever someone figures out the answer, we all do a shot.
Okay.
Make them retardedly, just like stupid hard.
I like how you think. We'll just have to make sure Twitch works a little better than last time.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Or like a play and hope version. Or like a bell and we'll ring it and we all do shots for our listeners.
It would be fun. Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump. My name is Daryl.
I'm Will.
I'm still Kyle.
We have a fantastic piece of show for you today.
Exactly.
Because you guys know what came out? The Champion's Purse.
Well, you know, without further ado, I think we should go ahead and jump in on this pack and kind of see how things lie here in the Champion's Purse. What do you guys think?
Hell,
I love
it.
I got the first one.
Sounds good.
We're going to start with House Baratheon, and it is Knight of the Songs. He is 2 cost, 2 strength, military power. He is a knight. He has the joust keyword, and he reads, Knight of the Songs gets +1 strength for each prize character you control. Now, I am a sucker for that joust keyword. Seems pretty darn solid, if you ask me.
I like him, but not because of joust. I just like that you have a fairly even a cheap two cost slot knight for Bera that's non-unique. I think that alone will excite a lot of Bera players to have something in that slot.
I mean, they've had Vanguard Lancer for like ever.
Yeah, but
the Joust brings it home, Kyle. Come on, come on.
All right, Daryl, it brings it home. I don't know what I was thinking.
I mean,
I do like him.
It's pretty okay. I mean, how many cards do we have at the moment that are going to boost him? That Smuggler? Anything else? I mean, in Baratheon, that is.
Yeah, nothing right now. I mean, it's. I mean, this guy is just kind of a like a backbone of the cycle. You know what I mean? Just add it in there, give you more of a reason to run priced cards. He's not priced himself, which is nice, because I mean, I like a 2-for-2 with Joust, and you can pump him up and stuff. Joust as a keyword is super good.
I mean, it is a really good keyword, but I feel like you do need him to be at 3 strength, at least, for Joust to really work. You know, a lot of characters that people are really using in challenges sit at that 3 strength threshold, and so if you're in a Joust at 3 strength, you're attacking, you beat him on the tie, then it's great. At 2 right now, which is what he's going to be most of the time, he's not doing it too well for me. I mean, sure, he's going to get better as more price stuff drops, but,
yeah.
You know, there's a threshold out there somewhere of how many prize cards is, you know,
right,
okay to run. I'm not dead certain where that number is yet, but it's probably not too high, which, you know,
right,
brings the knight's usefulness down a little.
But Bera is a house that I think of the 7 playable house cards. I don't know what you call a neutral, but it's the faction.
Yeah.
But Bera cares the least, I think, about the drawbacks on prized. And you can even use it in an aggressive manner, forcing power onto your opponent's house so you can then steal. So I think the prize count in Bera is going to be elevated compared to other houses. But his ability is gravy for me. Just a non-unique 2-cost knight, I think, sits really well in a lot of Bera decks.
Yeah. I just think he's incredibly solid. I will be really surprised, just as kind of a final note here, to see like if there is like an attachment that ends up coming out or something that gives a character prized, and then it, you know, it gives him something else, so then maybe you could have kind of an activation, if you will, to boost him up or something. I don't know. Maybe an attachment or a location or something. I don't know.
That would be cool.
If I had to give him something just as a standalone, I'd give him a C. I think he's plenty solid, and he's going to fit nicely in those knight decks.
Yeah, I think I'm... Oh, go ahead, Kyle.
No, I'll give him at least a C+. I almost want to push B-. I think he'll definitely see plenty in knight decks. I don't know where else to see him. Probably in prized, because just go to slam home a challenge at will seems real good. So I'll give him C+, B-.
I don't think I'd go that high, but probably just a regular C is probably fine. he'll be all right. Prize decks will definitely want him. Knight decks might want him, again, depending on how much prize they can really afford to play. I've, you know, been fairly happy with some of the other 2-cost knights Bera has, depending on what other kind of tech you want to use in the deck. You may kind of rotate among those 2-cost knights, so he might fit in.
Yeah. All right. Kyle, you going to give us our next one?
Okay. Next we have Ryder from Storm's End. Another non-unique 2-for-2 military power. Again, I think it's a real good slot for Bera. This one's a Bannerman. And it's along those splash out of house themes. We have, if you control a Stark character, he gains +1 strength. And if you control a Lannister character, he gains stealth. So, seems pretty solid. If you're going to do conquest to either of those houses or from those houses to Bera, a 2-for-3 Bicon for Stark isn't bad, and a 2-for-2 stealth seems also pretty good. And he has a Bannerman trait, and we've seen some stuff come out with that synergy lately, so another solid card in a slot that Barrett doesn't have a ton of right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of an impact he's going to have in standard games, if you will, but in draft he could be super fun. But yeah, the Bannerman trait is nice to see now. We're starting to get more support for that, and he seems pretty solid.
You know, that's a good point, Daryl, about draft. It does make me kind of wonder if some of these sort of cards in this set isn't FFG seeding the pool for future draft environments, because I'm pretty sure they've said before that, you know, the plan is to eventually change up the pool and it won't always be the one we've got right now. And mm-hmm. something like this is just perfect in that kind of setting.
Yeah, definitely. And fits the theme of, you know, conquest that they're trying to do, as well as, yeah, definitely bolsters draft possibilities. And we love that.
Mm-hmm. And I just love cross-house play anyway. I love splashing all sorts of random odds and ends in Joust. And, you know, conveniently, the two houses here on the Rider are the houses that they've got dual house characters for.
Right.
So it's possible to still be playing a straight Baratheon deck, so to speak, and still activate it, which is pretty sweet. Yeah, I'm pretty okay with it. It really kind of has to go into a certain deck that can activate that. I don't think I would ever include it otherwise, but like Kyle said, the 2-for-2 stealth is pretty tempting.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. So, Kyle, if you had to give it a rating, what would you give it?
I'm only going to give him a C. He does not impress me as much as Knight of Songs, but I still think he's a solid character, so I'll give him a C.
Will?
This is a tough one. As much as I like him, I think I'm feeling maybe like a C-minus range, because he does have to be a pretty specific deck, I think, that wants to take advantage of those abilities, you know, and actually be playing a lot of the dual house stuff or otherwise splashing.
Yeah, I think as a standalone right now, Bannerman isn't really a powerful sub theme.
Yeah. Raytheon's got just the one, right? I mean, the one that has an ability that refers to Bannerman.
Yeah, Alistair Florent at the moment. So, you know, later on the cycle, he could become better, but I don't like him as much as Knight of the Songs. But he could absolutely become a thorn in your side in one way or another, but I just don't think he has that utility, so I'm going to give him a D. Just kind of there.
All right. On to the next one. I guess that's me, huh?
That's you, brother.
This one is a House Baratheon-only event, A Taste of Glory. Challenges. Until the end of the phase, each prized character you control gets +2 strength and gains renown. I think the problem is very similar to the Knight at the moment, as well as the Smuggler from the first pack. We just don't have the prized in Baratheon right now to do really anything with this event yet. By the end of the cycle, maybe. It's hard to rate at the moment, since we don't know what all prized characters we're going to have. If you're doing Conquest or something and grabbing some of the prize characters from other houses right now, maybe you can make something work. It is nice that it's till the end of the phase instead of just the challenge or something, and it is all of them that you control. I don't know. It's just tough.
FFG does this on purpose.
Yeah.
Or at least it's only a tidbit at a time.
Just to make our ratings very difficult.
I mean, that's fine. That's the thrill of it. Somebody made, just a quick side note, somebody made a forum post, and I cannot remember who it was, and Card Game DB just talking about looking at cards in retrospect. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's the same idea. You know, you look at something once, you're like, oh, I don't know, and then later on it turns out to be really good or really awful.
No, yeah, this meta is changing all the time, and now I feel like it changes so drastically, even month to month sometimes, that cards that thrive one moment are almost unplayable the next, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting to see how ratings and usefulness fluctuate so drastically.
Yeah.
But I think this card can really give me one prized guy with Vigilant, and I think this really rocks some socks.
Yes.
So it could definitely be the closer to your game, that push over the top, whatever you need. Maybe a Noble Cause if you're running some cheap dudes. That are prized, because, I mean, part of prized is we were seeing they tend to be under-costed for what they are. So if you give me, like, a one-cost guy with Vigilant,
yeah,
you know, this can make him pump plus two and give him renown, too. So I think this will see some play, especially in rush decks, but I think you're right, Daryl. We need just a few more prized cards to come out before this really is going to make it into some tournament decks.
Yeah, you know, there's some jank out there already that you could find a way to give someone prized who may not have it. The first thing that comes to mind is Banner Bear, I think is the name of it, maybe not. But I don't know if I don't know if anyone has that trait right now with prize. But, you know, there could be some ways to mess around. But, you know, honestly, I don't know where to put it. There's been plenty of cards that give renown and plus two strength. Or more like one card, but regardless, it's just kind of there at the moment. Will, if you had to give it a rating, what would you give it?
Oh boy, that's yeah, that's so tough. At the moment, I'm gonna give it a D, with the caveat that could sure go up. You know, if the right prize cards are actually released to back it up.
I'll swing the other way. I mean, yeah, I think I'm kind of looking at the future a little bit, but there's just so many scenarios where this can close games for you, and cards that almost by themselves are in a combo with one other thing can win you games. I'll give it a little C+, B minus again, somewhere in that really solid, I want this in my deck kind of area.
Yeah, as it stands right here, I just have to give it a D, but I could see, you know, we've already seen some cards with prize, and maybe you're doing some conquest stuff, and you're able to give them plus two in renown, but
well,
I just don't know.
Conquest, don't forget, only gives them prize
as
they would play.
Right, yeah. Well, I'm just talking about, like, just having some of those prize guys and having them in play, like, oh wait, that Caitlyn, she's House Stark only, right? No, she's not. Anyways... But as it is right now, it's just kind of there. I don't know. It almost feels like it's baiting you into a trap. Like, oh yes, I'll get all these prized guys out, and then I'll have a taste of glory, and then I'll just win the game there. You know, I just have to give it a D right now. We'll see if it wins any games.
All right.
All right. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now we're changing houses. We are in El Greyjoy. And first up, we have Wex Pike. He is unique. He is 2-cost, 1 strength, military intrigue, and a power icon. He has the Squire trait. He is prized 1 and has stealth. And he reads response. After you win an unopposed challenge in which Wex Pike participated, choose 1 prize card in your dead or discard pile and return it to your hand. This could prove to be kind of powerful.
Yeah. I think this will be really, really good.
I mean, again, depending on the prize card cards you have available. In Greyjoy, we just have Wex and the Reaver's Song right now, right? So you're gonna have to go out of house at the moment to find something to return. Because if you're bothering to play the Reaver's Song at all, you're probably playing, you know, triplicates of it and building around it like I am. Now, I don't know. Maybe that means you want to just keep looping it every turn. I don't know. But we'll see.
You could get dupes of Wex back. I just thought of that.
Yeah, that's yeah. possible. That may help him a little bit. Of course, being at that one strength point, he is ultra vulnerable to burn, but still being a Tricon with stealth is awfully nice, even at that low strength point.
And it's not like Greyjoy's unknown to strength bumps.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I like him. I like him a lot. And especially with everyone kind of being down on old Wex.
Yeah.
I always dug old Wex. Right now, but... You know, he still forces through a lot of challenges, but he is an ally, and I do think that allies are going to be more vulnerable now with the refugees and the back in the mix, so to speak, which ups the usage of dissension. So this Wex sure gets some points for not being an ally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him. I like him a lot.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at him, I like him. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the meta takes prized cards as a whole. And just seeing the decks that are constructed that are willing to play a prized card over and over again, whether it be an event that just goes to your discard pile or a character that dies, he has potential. You know, we've seen all the prized cards are just super powerful, so we'll see.
I feel like it's probably characters that people will want back more than the events. I mean, the events will be super powerful, but you're for sure giving your opponent that power if you play it again, and again and again. The character, Wex could be a nice backup plan to get a powerful character back if they happen to, be removed from the board. So.
All right. I guess I have to give him a rating. Off the top, I'm just going to go ahead and give him a C. I think he could be very solid for prized. I'm not sure if he's exactly going to be the backbone of your deck, though.
I'm going to give him a B. At least a B.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. He feels like a solid B to me. Useful, but not everywhere.
All right. Let's move on to the next one.
Yes, indeedy.
This is me.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Greyjoy event. Every captain is a king. And it is Greyjoy only. And after a play response, sorry, after a player declares a naval attacker or defender, a player, not you, put a warship location into play from your hand.
It's interesting for sure. But it's tied into being, a naval attacker or defender being declared, which we already know from the Black Sails agenda, depending on the deck you're up against, that can be tough, So you have to have the initial character to initiate the challenge and another to throw in if you're attacking. Defending is a little easier, but you're popping a warship into play and blowing this event to do that to get what? Maybe a surprise kill out of like
here.
Foam Drinker?
Foam Drink? Yeah, you get a Foam Drinker, your Maiden's Bane. I think there's all kinds of warships here. The naval, what's the Neil Warship to Pump Dudes one? Naval Escort?
Yeah.
Any of those, it's another surprise pump, especially on defense for your old way deck, just the threat of this makes me nervous. Out of house stuff, I'd say Meraxes, but that's no longer an option. But you can go get other warships, not sure what else you'd go get, but...
Yeah, the main bonus would be dodging the out of house penalty on stuff, but aside from Meraxes, I don't really know anything people are going to want to play. Maybe some sort of weird deck that wants the extra power from White Harbor Droman. I don't know. That feels pretty jank, even to a Shaga like myself. It just doesn't feel like it does enough to me to justify its card slot. Because you're just down a card when you do this, unless you are for sure getting a kill off of Foam Drinker or. Oh, shoot, what's the one that grants deadly to a raider?
Oh, silence? Is that it?
Maybe.
I can't remember.
I think there are a lot of really solid warships that do a lot of cool things. And let's say you do the math, and again, I think this is going to see the most play out of the old way. And let's say you do the math, you're like, okay, even if he pumps this stuff, Mane's Bane is only 4 strength, I can totally push across this intrigue, use my Condemned by the Councils, this is going to be kick-ass, and then you declare it, and they have a naval window right there, just defense in, drop in another warship, and screw up all your plans. I think this goes along with that, the old way, threat of activation deck.
Mm. Maybe.
I think this will see play. I think it'll be rather strong.
If it's the pretty...
And it's marginal.
You know, but if it's the really location-heavy version, you have to have a character on the board for this, or one of the warships that becomes a character with a naval icon. So,
and we have those. So, yeah, it's not a big deal. And I think it's marginal. Like, it can have big effect for you. If you can be like, haha, I surprised you with my warship, made to kill a dude, and that's great. And if they waste a cancel on this, like a paper shield or a hand's judgment, I don't think it wrecks your day. It's not like you're going to build a deck around it, but I think it's a solid event, especially when they think paper shield is going to see a lot more play with prized events.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a good event to run. I mean, you're not going to weep if it gets canceled, but can really like be tricksy for you if you want it to be.
Yeah, I will say I like the nod toward naval again. You know, I like the idea of them continuing to develop that that theme. As it stands here, I mean, it's all right. I mean, naval deck. I mean, I would assume you'd use it if you're running a naval deck, like just to boost your income, boost your play a little bit. You know, play it, even a 2-cost warship, just putting it in for free. Like, why not catch somebody off surprise? A little +2 boost if it's LIV and draw a card. I don't know. It might have some utility. On a separate note, does it not bother anybody else that some events don't have traits? I don't understand that.
A lot
I think
of
that
events
every,
don't have traits.
Every card should have traits. If some events are going to have traits, I don't know why other events can't have traits. This could be a naval tactic or something. I don't know. Just saying.
Alrighty.
Just saying, bro.
So Daryl's alone.
Yep. Well, speaking
and
of
I'll
being
give it a
alone,
C+.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's find out how alone we are in our ratings. C+. I'm not feeling that generous. I do think there may be some decks that'll try it out. The old way probably wants it more than anything else, Greyjoy. But I'm not feeling it. I'm thinking a D.
Yeah. I don't think it will see much play at all. I mean, unless some baller-ass warships come down the pipe. So I will also give it a D. It has a place, just not in top-tier decks. But maybe I'm wrong.
All right, on to me then.
Yep. One last thought on that. I also realized this gets around the Reaver song.
It does. It does.
Uh-oh.
And I do like that. Okay. On to the next one, then?
Yep.
I'm excited for this one. This is pretty sweet. This is on to Lannister with Sir Robert Strong. He's a Shadows card, so he's an S1 cost. 3 strength, a military icon. He's Kingsguard and a knight. He's House Lannister only and has no attachments. And each character with a printed cost that is less than the number of characters in its controller's dead pile comes into play next. Maybe not so great against Greyjoy if they're saving all the things. But otherwise, I think this will be pretty sweet. You throw some Frey Hospitality at your opponent, maybe pick off some weenies with some military challenges, maybe now my grin shut down, the Tyrell intrigue kill event. Help me out here.
Yeah, terminal schemes.
Thank you. Something like that. It doesn't really take much to get enough in their dead pile to make sure everything comes into play melt. You know, on your side, you will probably be quickly affected by that in Lannister as well, unless you get really lucky with some of the stuff like
the Doubting Septas and the High Septum and the like. It goes to the bottom of your deck. But I think, of course, being a Kingsguard and Shadows already kind of pushes you toward trying him out with the other Shadows Kingsguard. And then you've got Eris around to stand characters. You've probably got the Kingdom of Shadows to stand more. I think you'll be able to mitigate his effect on your board pretty easily.
Yeah.
Close down the game.
Yeah, I've always dreaded cards like this. I hate that. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Lanny, City of Shadows, is going to be a mess with something like him floating out there.
Yeah, just an absolute stasis thing. And yeah, City of Shadows, so they can pick up the Black Cells, maybe lock someone down turn one when they're played with Robert, then trigger the Cells, at the start of the standing phase by bringing something like Suppressed him out of Shadows. Now they can't stand. Of course, yeah, then you go back around to the next turn and they're locked down. Yeah, I think there's a lot of really strong control potential for Lannister here. I freaking love him.
And cool art. You know, for being a big zombie, zombies looking pretty stylish.
Yeah. This art is fantastic. I think the same person that did this art did Preston Greenfield's art, and it looks so baller.
I'd have to have Preston in front of me to double check, but that's sure possible. Preston's art is pretty good.
Yeah. All right. So if you had to give it a rating, what would you give it?
I'm liking Robert awfully well. You still kind of have to have a deck built around it a bit, I think, to mitigate that, but I don't think it'll be too hard to do it. And there's a lot of Lannister decks that will want to take advantage of this. So I'm feeling like a B+.
Yeah.
I will confirm it is the same artist.
Ah, haha.
Thank you.
So Darrow's correct there. But I'll give him an A-. I like him more than Will likes him.
Yeah. The more I think about it, I also just remembered that you can bring him back, of course, with the Kingsguard plot, which makes it very frustrating for your opponents when he's locking him down. So, yeah, it may be worth bumping him up to an A-.
You could run Nightmares and blink him on your turn after they marshal. Oh, lol. That's hilarious.
Nice.
These cool things. Any card that inspires a million tricks and cool combos to run through my head has to, like, I just have to believe is, at its core, a great card.
Certainly doesn't. This has the potential to be incredibly powerful. I can't even find the words for it. Like, this could be really, really good. I want to give him an A really bad, because he can turn out to kick your own ass, which he might not be, though. It might not be such a bad thing if you're already ahead, and if you're running some Neil effects. Heck, even if you're not running Neil effects and just a Kingdom of Shadows deck that maybe has a lot of target removal and whatnot, you could be, you know, really on the upper end of that, and with a couple of standing effects, no problem. So, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to give him an A. I think that this guy could really, really put the stomping on some people. I mean, you think about like just a Neil effect. I mean, it's just multiple guys. They play multiple guys or put multiple guys into play in any way. Oh, nice ambush. Okay, that guy's knelt. He could be supremely powerful. So, supremely powerful.
Supreme.
All right, let's move on. Whose turn is it?
Yours.
Back to you.
All righty. Next, we're staying with Lannister, and we have Frey Emissary. He is 2 cost, 2 strength, military power. He has the Bannerman as well as the House Frey trait. And he reads, if you control a Stark character, Frey Emissary gets +1 strength. If you control a Baratheon character, Frey Emissary gains renown. That could be interesting.
If you're conquesting two or from Vera, this guy's an A, hands down. The Stark one, I give a C. So, I mean, I think one of these is supremely better than the other. So, but, and Lanny to Barra and Barra to Lanny seem like such good fits as it is. I'm seeing a lot of that deck running around, and this guy just slots in there real nice. I like him a lot.
Yeah, even if you're not doing Conquest and for some reason you're still doing a treaty or something, he slots in. I mean, that renown, I think, in Lannister, speeding them up, is a lot bigger than some of these other things. Certainly more than like a plus one strength is. Even if you're not doing one of those like Conquest Rush decks or something, even if you've got some sort of control idea or just want to load up on some of the dual house Tyrells in some kind of straight, so to speak, Lannister deck. That extra power generation from the Frey Emissary, I really like the sound of. I think that can often make quite a difference for Lannister.
Yeah, I love the fact that they're printing guys like this. This really is going to help not only draft, but just also maybe somebody wants to run like a crazy rainbow deck and just either run it out of neutral or what, you know, and just mix a bunch of different houses and do a bunch of crazy cool stuff. It's fun, to say the least.
We've seen that plot that's coming up that gives a boost to claim based on how many houses you've got.
Absolutely. And wasn't there something else? Hollow Hill that does something? It's just a draw. I thought there was something else that did something with different amount of affiliations you had, but maybe not. But yeah, just seeing him there, I'm probably still going to give him a C. He's not insane, but I think he's very solid for what he does. Economical renown is awesome. Coming out of Stark with 2 for 3, probably not great, but if you could hop that Stark in with a Baratheon character, or maybe you're running Brienne of Tarth, maybe she's in play or something, and then boom, 2 for 3 with renown, that's very nice. And he's not an ally. And he's a Bannerman, which is another thing we've seen, as well as House Frey is a trait we're going to see possibly with that army that came out.
There's the possibility we're going to be seeing some more House Frey synergy, which is something. It still doesn't look really worthwhile at the moment, but I guess we can keep our eyes peeled and see if something materializes. You know, he's all right. He's got a home in a couple decks, and I do like that renown. So he's worth a C, I think.
Great. I'll give him a B. Like I said, I think he's an A out of when you're dealing with Vera. He's a C when you're dealing with Stark, if that. So I'll give him a B minus.
Well, there you go. All right.
On to me.
On to you.
On the big, probably the, well, I think probably the splashiest card in this pack, and that is Counterplot, which we did spoil here. So, but just read again for those of you tuning in. Counterplot. The Lannister only prized 3 event, limited response. The Lannister is a house where that matters. after an opponent reveals a plot card, neal a unique Lannister character to cancel the revealing of that plot and move it to its owner's used pile. That player must choose and reveal a new plot card. Limit 1 limited response per round. And I stand by what I said every time we've talked about this card, when we kind of had a snippet of it spoiled. We finally got the whole card spoiled. I love it. I think it's great. There's so much here you can deal with. And plots are getting so powerful that getting in someone, I mean, plot scripts are becoming a big deal. And sometimes if you don't have some way of throwing them off their game, it gets real rough. But this, I mean, this can do it. All you need is a unique Lannister out, and you can shut it down, whatever it happens to be. Fear of Winter, gone. Valor, gone. Power of Blood, gone. There's a lot of things that people rely on that you can just get rid of. And that's nice.
And Lannister sure has some cheap uniques, you know, around, which makes needing to kneel somebody like that to play this sting a little less.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, a card like this, it just raises the stock of, you know, Paper Shield and things like that.
Playing a Maester deck, I'm going to cancel you out the gates. You don't need that.
Yeah.
You don't need that. I mean, just, you can dismantle so much. Playing House of Dreams, playing your Tunnels deck, then you know City Besiege is just coming up. Boop.
Yeah.
Gone. Yeah.
Heaven forbid somebody's still trying to play Manning the City Walls to drop in a fat army. Yeah. There's still a lot of great options.
I mean,
I'm really a big proponent of running restricted plots just because you can depend on getting them and using them.
Right.
If you can figure out someone's restricted card off a prize free event, that seems good. And my thought is I've been running Infamous at least one or two copies in most of my Lannister decks. Cause it's like, oh, I'm going to cancel that plot, and then I'm going to get that 3 power back.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, the stock just goes up and cancel after something like this, but hey, if you don't have the cancel on you, that could really F somebody's day up. I mean, prize 3 is pretty hefty. Let's not forget, but whew, man, that's a powerful effect.
And usually it's early game. I think you're going to see this used turns 1, 2, and 3. I think it's going to be a very early game card. That power isn't as significant. The pressure isn't necessarily on you at that point. And if it's the kind of deck where the pressure is on you that fast, you probably want to blow it just to get them in the game. I mean, second turn, I called and talked to people and verified this is how it works. So shout out to Ben for, like, the ruling. But, okay. I mean, let's say they turn 2, they artist section you first turn or whatever. They play the first Power of Blood. Second turn, they play the Power of Blood. You can drop your Valor knowing you have this because this counterplot will cancel that Power of Blood before a Valor goes off. I mean, and with Noble Cause running around, I think you're going to see a lot of Barra Conquest, Noble Rush running around. I think that just kicks ass.
That's a pretty good point. As long as they are not where that 3 power is going to, you know, hand them the game, then you can potentially blow them out pretty hard there.
Yeah. I mean, this card could be a great answer for those games where you're absolutely in control and it just turns out that Valor is the reason you lost that game. It could be really good. It can be really, really good.
Go ahead.
I was also going to say it could also blow up in your face if it gets canceled.
Well, yeah, there is that. And speaking of blowing up in your face, I was going to ask, that other show, that Beyond the Wall dude, Alex has kind of been giving us crap for liking Counterplot for one particular reason more than anything else, which is the fact that your opponent gets to now choose and reveal a new plot knowing what yours is. And I'm kind of curious what you think of that. I mean, it is a drawback, to be sure, but I'm curious how much of one.
See, I don't know if that's the biggest drawback. I think maybe the biggest drawback, other than giving them 3 power, is that you're not going to stick them on 0 claim for a whole turn. I really think that's more of a drawback. I mean, so they get to pick a new plot after they know what you've chosen. Most of the time, they don't really care anyways.
Yeah, you have to be forward thinking. Like, you know, you have this in hand. You're not drawing. Regardless of when you get this card in your hand, there's no draw window between choosing your plot and when it reveals. So you have this card in hand, and you know you're most likely going to do it here, or at least prepared to do it here. So make sure you have a plot ready to go that's not going to mess it. Like Retaliation.
Yeah.
Retaliation coming off the list. Drop that. It's like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do?
Right. I mean, it's not
very little.
Yeah.
You have to worry about.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not like you're going to sit there and drop Twisted Fate or Twist of Fate and then counterplot them. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have a pretty solid plot on your turn. You're going to play this. And then after what they do, I mean, it's probably moot if they're in a position where they need to Valor anyways.
But the game's getting to a point where I think coming back from a Valor is not as hard as it once was.
No,
so
there's a lot more draw floating around for everybody. That helps a lot. Recursion potentially helps. Load back up out of the discard pile if you've got some stuff in there. There's options.
I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of linchpin plots. Like, let's say they drop threat. Usually threat comes before valor. Okay, I counterplot away your threat turn. Okay, well, what other reset do you have? Do you want to go down to zero claim to wipe this? Because, I mean, you can. But yeah, knowing I'm probably going to get... Would you, how many times have we sadly gone, okay, here comes the threat turn. Like, you know, it's time. So drop something to claim, high gold, and just ride it out.
Yeah.
You just have to... There has to be some forward thinking. You have to plan and strategize. You can't just blindly run this and go, I'm going to cancel all that crap I don't like.
Right.
You have to consider it. It has to be a thoughtful card.
Right. And not, I mean, in not to mention, not every Valor is worth canceling. You know what I mean? If I've got a handful of cards and he just happens to have nothing on the board and I've got like three dudes in play, maybe it's not worth canceling at that time. Maybe you can just play more dudes and just keep crushing. I think that whenever you play this card, if you're doing it right, I mean, you'll be ready. And whether they see the plot that you have revealed or not, probably isn't very much help. It's a very dim light in a very, very dark place.
Okay, so what kind of rating would you guys give it in the end?
A for counterplot.
I mean, got to give it an A. Somebody's going to lose after they play this card by not thinking or something, but absolutely an A. I mean, canceling a plot is fantastic.
I think I've come down a little from my initial elation when we got to spoil it, because I had so many fond memories of the CCG era version. Now that I've had the chance to play a bit more prize cards, like you Murder Your Children and all, it's easier to get a real feel for the weight of that prize 3, which does worry me more.
It is heavy.
Yeah, yeah. So I think my opinion on it's coming down a little because of that. I'm still going to play it and try it out. But overall rating, I'm putting it somewhere in the B range instead.
Just run Infamous.
Just run Infamous.
The price is worrying you. Run Infamous, because let's be honest, at most you're going to have one cancel in hand, so you play it. Oh, I'm going to paper shield that. Well, I'm going to Infamous it. Do you have a second paper shield? Because if not, I still just netted myself 3 power.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Infamous should not be what drags this card down.
I mean, price 3 is really hefty, but I think the decks that are going to play this the most, I mean, there's probably going to be plenty of just plain Jayne Lannister decks, but Power Behind the Throne, I feel, is going to play this the most. They always need, they splurge out, and then they need to just live through the Valor turn. And
oh, yeah, the Rush Power Behind the Throne will love this for sure.
Yeah. I think you'll see it out of all of them. I think Clansmen will love it, Flood the Board. Again, ignore the Valor, and they want to kneel, most of them. I think you're going to see it on most Lannister builds. It's a stall. If you're playing like a lock kind of deck, where you're trying to stall out till you get the lock in, and they can't do anything, which you have enough black cells and guild halls and brothels that there's nothing they can do, until you get to that point, like, this is a great stall card. Play your own Valor, and oh, they drop something high gold. Oh, I'm going to burn through that plot, move on to the next thing. They play Twist of Fate on your Valor. That's a good thing to get.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's just so versatile. It's going to be hard not to include one of, if not two. And if not one or two of in any deck. I doubt I push it to 3.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to sit at 2 of.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I hope that all the houses get a badass prize 3 event. It would be fun. Moving on?
I think so. Unfortunately, right. We talked about that for long enough. I don't remember whose turn it is.
Oh, boy.
I read it. It's
your turn, Will.
Okay. We move on to Martell now for the Summer Sea Scout. He's 2 cost, 2 strength, an intrigue, and a power icon, and that intrigue has a naval enhancement. Ooh. He's learned. He's House Dane. He's prize 1. And response, after you lose a challenge as the defender, reveal the top 2 cards of your deck. Put all revealed prize cards into your hand. Return all non-prize cards to the top of your deck in any order. Wow, look at that, a naval enhancement in Martell. I didn't really think they were going to get that, so that's interesting. Not really sure how I feel about this from a Nedley point of view, I'm going to throw out there, though. The naval thing, you know, I could see them getting one or two, but it feels really weird to me that he's learned. And, you know, much like some of the other prized cards, why is he prized? I feel like that's something that should be going on big, splashy, impressive stuff, not Nameless Chud number 47.2.
Yeah. You know? I will say, just really quick, I will say when I first saw him and I wasn't thinking about how Conquest was your guys leave, as they leave play, they gain prize, because then I was like, oh, man, in a Conquest deck, you just reveal the stuff and boom, you get your prize, guys, but that's not the way it works.
Right. You'll have to saturate the deck pretty heavily with prize stuff to get much use out of him, you know, because if you trigger him once and you don't hit on a prize card, you know, those two cards go right back to the top of your deck where they were, so you can't just keep triggering him and trying to dig, because you'll just keep seeing the same two cards. Plus, you know, there's the marginal downside of showing your opponent what you're about to draw, so...
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I can't, you know, it sucks that it doesn't say just look at the top two and then reveal any prize cards and add them to your hand or something.
Yeah. That would have been somewhat better.
Yeah.
It could be cool. I mean, it depends what kind of prize stuff is out there and if you need to dig for something real bad. Like, let's say you lose challenge with their souped up character and you do this, and one of those two cards is you murdered your children. I mean, boom.
Yeah.
But that can be a play. I think we're going to have to, this is another one we have to look into the future, and hopefully you get some more prized card support for this, but it could be kind of solid.
I mean, I'll agree with that. We're just going to have to see what else is coming out. I mean, not to mention, you could be running an Alliance or Conquest or something deck and have them in there, and maybe there's going to be something else prize that's in-house that's not necessarily Martell that you would want to see. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I think your best option to really use some of these prized effects, like the Scout and the Knight of the Songs and such, is going to be some kind of Martell Baratheon Conquest or Treaty deck, where you could be combining those cards. Now, that's still not looking great. I mean, the prize cards I'm going to be getting with the Scout or more Scouts or Smugglers, or maybe you murdered her children if Martell is my actual house card. You know, with the Smuggler, I'm standing some or Sea Scouts or more Smugglers. I don't know. Just there's a few cards around for it yet, but it doesn't feel like those cards are worth quite enough to try to put that whole deck together.
All right. So if you had to give him a rating, what would you give him?
Me, I'd give him a pretty low rating. He's like unless you're trying some sort of really jank Martell Black Sails combo build again, in which case it's nice to have that naval icon. Otherwise, I'm giving him a D. Learned Crest aside, I suppose, because that just still feels so weird to me.
Yeah. We're going to start playing Doran's Game, yo. Boom.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. You get enough of them, of these Learned Crests, and maybe that'll start to work.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's just for that I'm going to go ahead and give him a C, because he does work with House Dane, and maybe in the future, this is a preemptive C, in the future maybe we'll see some awesome prized House Dane stuff or something like that that can go with him.
I'll give him a C-. He's okay.
All right. Let's move it on, then. Next up, sticking with Martell, we've got a location. It is Blood Orange Grove. It is one cost, has the Dorn trait. It is prized one and reads, any phase, kneel Blood Orange Grove to choose a character with a crest. Until the end of the phase, that character loses all crests and gains a challenge icon of your choice. And I dig the balls out of this card. Now, I know that there have already been cards that have given icons like Green Blood Vessel that I love so much. It's really nice to not have, you know, to be able to, like, go on the offensive with this card so you can go first. and do some damage. So the first things that I've actually played with this card here this past weekend and did some cool stuff with like a Conquest to Stark deck that used Northern Cavalry Flank and then giving Ariane a military icon, so making her a tricon on like my two claim plot turns.
That's pretty cool. You know.
Yeah, so there is some fun stuff to be had with this. Now, you are giving up your crest. So if you have some crest specific tech that you're using, well then you're gonna miss out on that. But I didn't find it too hard to work around because I had it was a Warcrest themed deck as well as a Noble Crest themed deck, and I didn't really have an issue. So it was a blast. This card is very good in my opinion.
I know I keep going back to picking it apart, but this is another great. I like this card a lot because of the versatility. Like you said, all the offensive ways you can use it. But pre-plot, I'm going to take away your Learned Crest on your Macer, so the Outwit is going to be crap when I Valor. I'm going to take away that Noble Crest on your Robert, so he's going to die to my Valor. There's a lot of use throughout all the phases for this card that I think is real cool. Taking away a Shadow Crest, I don't know why you would, but I mean, just all kinds of stuff.
Hey, you never know. You never know if you need to. Maybe they have Kingdom of Shadows out.
Yeah. I mean,
It's
a very versatile effect and not the kind of thing we've seen before in the game at all. So I like that it shows that even, you know, this many years in, there's some new yet surprisingly basic ground to tread.
Yeah. I definitely like it. You know, use more offensively, but you can definitely mess with your opponent's stuff. And maybe they, you know, you've seen a Die by the Sword come out of them, you know, earlier in the game, and maybe you take away that Warcrest, or you just do it for good measure. I mean, who knows?
And you are stripping. I mean, it doesn't say you have to give them an icon they're missing. Just give them another military icon, something worthless.
Exactly.
So all right. Kind of reading then.
All right, it's me. I'm going to go ahead and give it a B. And I'm not going to give it an A because I don't think it's going to be the end-all, be-all or you know, a real front-runner of a deck, but I think that it will slot into a lot of decks very well and be potent.
Kyle, how about you?
I think this card has a lot of hidden pain-in-the-ass potential. For whatever reason, I just get a really strong Pentashi vibe off of it as a something that could be just a wrecker. I'm going to give it an A minus.
Wow. That's
half of that I think is gut, but just thinking of,
hey.
I like versatility. It's huge to me that all my cards I can find uses for every turn, and this I believe most certainly will. So for that, A minus.
I mean, it's really cool. I think have a bit of a tendency to underrate locations. You know, it's a problem. I admit it. I'm going to meetings on Tuesday nights at 5 in
That's
the
right.
church basement. I'll let you guys know how it goes. But I think Blood Orange Grove is going to be lower for me. It's definitely versatile and kind of cool, but I think probably just like a C+ for me.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a lot of cool potential jank in there as well to, like, give guys crests who didn't have them before maybe with another effect and do some cool stuff. But, I mean, in the end, you know, you're giving them an icon for something. I mean, I understand why you would give it a C, but there's a lot of utility there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You're wrong and you're stupid, Will. You're wrong and you're stupid.
Listeners tell me that all the time.
Yeah, if we had a nickel for every time, we would have over $2 at this point.
We could fund this podcast.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say.
$2.
Alrighty, next one up is Desert Raider. Another Martell card. This is a 2-for-2 non-unique House Dane ally with just a military icon. It is House Martell only, which we haven't seen a lot of this cycle, trying to encourage the splashing. You've not seen the House X only stuff as much. But he is prized 1. And this is a champion card from the European Melee Champion, whose name I will not try to butcher on the show. But he has a response. And that is, after you lose a challenge, put him into play from your dead pile. Then, choose a character in either an intrigue or power icon until the end of the phase. The chosen character loses that icon, and Desert Raider gains it. I think that is pretty cool.
I think it's awesome, yeah.
You guys must be seeing something I'm not.
I mean, okay, he's claimed Soak for Martell, which they've not had before. Yes, he does give power to your opponent, but he's also icon control when he does it, which means that you can force your way through to get that power back off their house card. Of course, Intrigue is definitely a challenge that Martell wants to be able to force through and really make count. He's a great way to recover after a reset, you know, after Valor or Wildfire or something. You know, especially if your opponent has just wiped the board and they're trying to also recover, and now you can pop these guys back in, effectively, you know, double your ability to refill the board and suppress their ability to make and defend challenges, which really helps you hammer home any edge you have after that. I like it a lot.
Okay. I understand that, like, recurring a character could be super annoying. You do have to lose a challenge in order to put him into play. I mean, if you're smart, you just kind of work around that effect once you've seen him in there. I mean, he doesn't have any
now
keywords.
It is challenge, just challenge. It's not as defender or as attacker. So, I mean, there's roughly six challenges going around that you'll be able to trigger that off of.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking as the defender.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing. The few Martell effects that are not just as defender always wind up feeling super powerful. Stuff like Ilaria, where you're just like, good grief, he gets to trigger that every time he throws a chump attack at me, too? So I think that, yes, you're right. It can be worked around, but it can be worked around on either side of the board. You can work it to your advantage if you are first player. Your opponent can try to mitigate it if they're first player, but it still seems pretty good.
Kyle, you got any other additional thoughts on this guy?
No, I think he's great. I kind of hit home with Will on this one. I think he's just what you want. If you're going to be trying to play Bloodthirst, which I still think is viable, even after all the hits to that particular build of it, I think this is great for that. Just being able to monitor your character count in a productive manner. I think he's great.
He is, you know, his traits are worth looking at. He's an ally, which is definitely a downside, possibly about to be more of a downside, and he can't come back from the discard pile, just dead. So that's right. Worth noting, but I think his benefits still outweigh that. And he is House Dane, which he doesn't particularly fit with any of the House Dane themes in the past, you know, gold tokens and such. But I do like having another Dane in the mix. You never know when we're going to hit on some of these just strong utility characters that'll really suddenly make that that deck click.
Yeah. I mean, I guess once you get a couple out there, it's good. But, I mean, he's still prized one. It is a champ card, and so maybe it's just a lot more powerful. I've never played with it, so maybe it'll turn out to be super good. I don't know.
All right.
I'll give him a B+.
Yeah, I'm feeling a pretty solid B+ here. I think a lot of decks are really going to like what he brings to the table.
Oh, geez. I'll give him a C. I think once you get a couple of them rolling, possibly it could be really good, but Honestly, I just don't see a lot out of him right now.
And that's the card I make fun of Daryl for.
that's yeah. going to be the one, huh?
Hey, as long as it's Daryl and not me this time.
I'll put him in a deck this weekend. We'll see. All right, well, why don't you give us the next one?
All right, we move on to Stark now for Sir Edmure Tully. He is 3 cost, 3 strength, military and power. He does have a war crest. He's House Tully, a knight and a lord. He is deadly and has any phase. Choose a card in any player's discard or dead pile. Shuffle that card back into its owner's deck. Limit once per round. Yeah, this seems pretty solid. Deadly feels a little weird on Edmure, because, you know, for folks that have read the books, or at least seen that one episode of the TV show, you'll realize he's kind of a fuck-up, but, oh well. It's a good effect. I think Stark's gonna dig it. It's gonna be great for them to keep their powerful uniques coming by getting dead copies out of the dead pile. And it even has some utility there since it can get into any player's discard or dead pile to kind of combat some recursion decks, you know? If somebody wants to play their prince's plans, you know, as they're restricted to get back on what he calls it, thinking maybe would be one of the best options available right now, just shuffle that sucker back in the deck so they can't get it.
Yeah, I think he's pretty solid, and it's a pretty good effect. I mean, you don't even have to kneel him to do it or anything like that. You just do it.
Yeah.
Whenever you want to do it, which is pretty cool.
It's a much better card than Edmure deserves.
Yes. It's much better than the previous Edmure, for sure. I mean, and it's a Warcrest.
Tully, Knight, yeah. Ward, yeah. All
of he's great. Traits.
Yeah.
He's great.
Literally all upside, you know? He's not even up against another, like, good version of himself. Just one copy, for sure, goes in every start deck from here on out, yep. I'm thinking.
Yep.
Well, yeah, any strong, military, unique Warcrest, like, how do you not run him in start?
Yeah, he lets you trigger any of the response events, the deadly maybe helps you force through a power challenge. If you want to try some kind of Tully theme or Knight theme or a combination thereof, he empowers both. Yeah, he's just really good.
Really good. All right, if you had to give him a rating, what would you give him?
Oof, that's tough. He's really, really good, but not like game-breakingly good, just super efficient. So I'm going to give him a B+, I think.
Tight. I'm going to go ahead and give him a C. He's solid.
Daryl's wrong. I'm going to give him a B++ because I like him more than Will does.
But you're not willing to give him an A-?
I can't bring myself to give a start card an A.
I mean, B++, huh? I mean, it doesn't... Yes. All right, bro.
You can interpret that as you will. The okay. words leave my mouth are B++.
All right. All right, moving on to the next one. We're sticking with Stark here. All right, we have the Gatehouse Tower, which is a unique Stark location. It is cost 1, has the Westeros trait. It is House Stark only. Your characters get +1 strength if you control fewer characters than each opponent. That's all right, I guess. That's really all I can say about it.
There's not a lot of Stark builds that you can count on having fewer characters. So, unless there's more cards that support this theme, or we get more jumper things like Caitlyn, it will be very tough to see this make a deck.
Yeah.
But in the right deck, it's a nice little boost.
Okay. The Gatehouse Tower just feels kind of weird, especially because it's House Stark only, you know? Maybe Martell Bloodthirst would have liked that, but in Stark, I would rather force that board presence. I would rather have more stuff on the board for sure. So I just don't know where it fits in Stark.
Yeah, I don't know if this is maybe a theme that they're going to try and create for Stark. Maybe they're trying to take the idea and kind of turn it on its head, because the idea with Stark has always been just numbers, overwhelming numbers with baller-ass kill events. This is kind of the opposite of that.
Yeah, yeah, it is very, yeah.
Maybe it's a... No, with Tully's, you still want a lot of dudes out there. I don't...
Oh, yeah, you really
want... I don't know. I don't know why it's even got to be House Stark only, like... okay.
So, yeah. What about rating?
I guess if I had to give it something, I'm just going to go ahead and give it an F. I don't think that Stark wants to go in this direction at all. And unless that's a theme that's coming later on in the cycle... but I still don't know if it's even worth a slot. There's a lot of really good Stark locations out there. So, yeah.
I will not build or like the deck that eventually runs this and kicks my ass. but it won't kick my ass with this card. This will just be like a little boost piece that annoys me. So even then, I'll give it a... I have to give it a D.
Yeah, it's feeling pretty bad to me, even with my location rating affliction. I feel pretty confident in giving this a D-.
All right, let's move on.
We should.
Kyle, throw something at us.
All right, let's move on from that to a Stark attachment. And this I actually went back and forth thinking about how I was going to feel about this. But we have a needle, one cost, unique attachment, item and weapon, prized 2, unique Stark character only. So, and it says, while attached character is participating in a challenge, opponents cannot trigger effects. So, essentially, it turns some unique Stark into Brienne.
Which is pretty rad.
Yes. In my opinion, Brienne of Tarth is one of the top 5 strongest cards in the game. And to give that effect is fat.
Now you're going to run a prize 2 attachment to get it?
Whoa.
Maybe?
I don't know. That's tough, considering what's in the rest of this pack. I don't know. Can I never have to play against Targaryen?
yes, Daryl. You can check that box when you turn in your deck list.
Okay.
Most major turn.
All right, then hell yeah.
Yeah, it is a unique attachment. So before another card for Tari that we'll talk about for this pack, I would have said that's actually, some protection because they're most commonly used. Attachment control was the Dragon Thief. But now I think that's not going to be much protection at all. It's really awesome, though. But I've heard this mentioned before. Does it bug you guys that this is Needle granting Brienne of Tarth's ability, which has been in the game forever, and not Oathkeeper? Like, wouldn't that have been a way cooler, Nedley connection?
If I would have weeped if Stark got Oathkeeper. Openly wept if the sword of Jaime Lannister went to Stark. Now, if it's Stark Lanny, sure, that'd be cool.
Okay, dual house. I mean, he does give it to Brienne.
I don't care.
Spoiler alert. Sorry, guys.
Nope, spoiler alert. I mean... That's a really good effect. I think you gotta have the right deck for it. I mean, price 2 is pretty fat, man, for an attachment. But we are, we're still not seeing a lot of attachment control in the meta currently. So currently it might be all right, but you gotta think you need to make sure you can save that character it's on. Otherwise when that character goes bye-bye, then they gain 2 power. So let's just rate it. Let's just move there. I mean, we know what it does and its prized cost. Let's just rate it and move on. This is tough.
I'll give it a It's going to fall in that C+, B-. I hate that I keep falling back to it. But it's a nice, balanced card. A lot of risk, a lot of reward. Dig it.
Yeah, I think I feel pretty much the same there. As we already know, like Daryl said, it's a really strong effect. So I think people are probably going to give it a whirl, but I don't think it'll stick around for very long.
I love the idea of attachments becoming relevant in the meta again. I love attachments very much. I think they have some cool effects, and you can do some cool stuff with it, and it's going to take a lot to build up what the 10-link destroyed for us. And I really like this card. I think that challenging a Martell player and not worrying about Red Vengeance is like the best, like the biggest, like, feeling in the world. And so I'm going to give it a B. I realize that attachments are fragile, but when you have this in your deck, you're guaranteed to challenge someone, and they can't do anything. All right? So no Pentoshis, no nothing. No ambush from the planes, no events coming at you. Nothing is coming at you while you're challenging this person or participating in this challenge. So it does work on defense as well. So that's my 2 cents. All right. Moving on?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, is that back to me already? Man, you wouldn't think this would be so hard to keep track of.
I think it's your turn. I'm sorry. I was so long-winded in that. Yeah, it's you.
Okay. Well, here we go. This time we get to move on to Targaryen, and this time I get another bizarre little piddly prize naval dude. This is the Roine Pohlmann. He's a 2 cost, 2 strength, intrigue and power icons. Both of them are naval. Naval enhanced, I should say. He has the East trait, and he has prize 1 in melee. Despite the fact that it feels kind of weird still that some chud has prized like this, I actually really dig him. He's just solid, simple, and really kind of fills a hole for Targ by spreading those naval enhancements around a little bit. I know I've seen some Targ Black Sails tried before. I know Greg did it. And this guy would really help a deck like that.
Yeah. I mean, melee is really good, and I think it's fantastic out of characters with naval enhancements,
yeah,
for sure.
That could potentially be a big strength swing, and you can just toss that in whenever.
Yeah, I think you would see a ton of this guy if he wasn't prized 1. With the being prized, I'm not sure.
I think that's exactly what you want out of the prize discussion. And, you know, I think he's fair of a balance. I think you're going to see some cool stuff with him. I'd love to see Targ Black Sails or just Targ Naval be a thing, just because it'd be a new, unique thought, something we hadn't seen before. So I'm all for his existence. I'm excited to see him. And, yeah, I think he's solid but balanced. Good card.
All right. We'll throw a rating at us.
Well, you know, as much as I like seeing these kind of just solid kind of French vanilla, as the term goes in Magic characters, he probably isn't actually worth more than a C.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, a lot of Targaryen's characters right now, even the chuds you see, have a lot of utility to them. I mean, he does have a fair amount. I'd probably give him a C as well. I lean towards something, you know, I'm kind of leaning towards a D, just that he doesn't really do anything else, but melee is super powerful. So, yeah, I'll give him a C.
He will be the key that unlocks the door to something really cool. So I will give him a C+. So that let it be known I rated him higher than the other hosts.
Fair enough.
All right.
It shall be remembered.
They have that stupid location that gives deadly to things with naval enhancements.
Yep.
Like, I think there's some stuff here. I'm not sure what it is, but I think this card will allow access to a really cool deck.
All right. I mean, I'd like to see Targ Black Sails as much as the next guy.
Could be pretty sweet.
All right. Next up, we're sticking with Targaryen. We have Viserys Targaryen. He's unique. He's cost 1, strength 1, intrigue power. He has the Lord and King trait. He has a Noble Crest. He is House Targaryen only and prized one. And he reads any phase, kneel Viserys Targaryen to choose and discard an attachment from play. Very good. Very good choice, attachment control. Turn him into a raven. Now you can plink off people's raven cards. Very nice. But, you
and
know,
he's
equally
a king
balanced.
That'll see play.
Yeah, he's a king. He's not shut down by other kings, but he will shut them down. He's just any phase, just kneel him and do it. This is the card that I was mentioning before that is going to make even a unique attachment like Needle hard to justify playing. Because it's just going to be so easy to discard attachments now. It, maybe not quite Tinlink levels since it won't go in every house. But Targ is still quite good and they just won't stick around with Viserys in the game now. Attachments, that is, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Viserys will make it into every Targaryen deck. Maybe I'm wrong, but that one strength opens him up to being discarded from play on your threat turn. I mean, I don't know. Running a prized one guy, you know, your threat from the north turn coming. I don't know. I mean, to be fair, if the meta doesn't play attachments, then you're kind of wasting your time with him. So
the ones they do play tend to be big hitters.
Right.
And we've already seen some pretty awesome attachments come out with those, like, warden attachments for their house card. Like, we've seen some stuff.
We have. We absolutely have. But will the meta still play them is the question. Like, as nice as they are, will they still play them? You know, that's the biggest thing. I mean, I see this guy.
I think he's only a one drop in Targ. And I don't think he alone will... he's a great boon for Targ, because they're not going to be afraid of him. But I think I still run attachments. I don't think he scares me that much.
He might scare me out of playing Needle. I mean, it just depends.
Yeah, it kind of depends. We'll see, but I definitely think every Stark deck wants one copy of him. So he will definitely
That's
be
That's interesting,
seen.
Since he's Targ only.
Well, right, yes. I just mean that all of the Stark, geez, all of the Targ decks, I can't talk, are definitely going to want that. I mean, he's up against the combo-rific King one that you really kind of have to build a certain deck for, and I don't think anyone other than Danny has been taking that to tournaments, right?
Alex from Canada ran it at Worlds in May.
Nice.
Yes, that's the only place I've ever seen it.
Yeah, or the infinite save and return to hand one, which is not bad, but I think this effect is something those decks will want quite a bit more.
Yeah. If the meta was full of attachments, he'd probably be a B, but I'm going to give him a C. I think he's obviously very strong for attachment control. He doesn't really do anything other than that. So, yeah.
Well, I think he's a pretty solid B.
I think he's a B+, because I like him more than Will does.
I mean, I think attachment control at Will is really nice, but if I'm not playing any attachments in my deck, then he's just there. But he's balanced. I'd say he's balanced at prized one and House Targaryen only, which is nice that we're not going to see him splashed in other houses. All right. Why don't you give us our next one, Kyle?
This is, a target attachment. One cost, non-unique, is an item. And it has more flavor text than actual text, but it reads, attached character gains a power icon, and during power challenges gains renown. So, kind of like Needle, we're just turning everything into Dothraki Outriders.
Yeah. Is that worth it? I don't think it is.
The renown's kind of nice, especially out of like Dothraki or something. Or if you're doing like the new summer attachment Drogo, maybe. But as a control player, I'm so envious of Renown because I very rarely have it.
Right.
So I'm probably just jaded a little bit, but...
Well, if you've got some Heir to the Iron Throne action going, maybe you've got some, well, you really got to have somebody who can take advantage of two power challenges. It's neat, I guess.
I mean, it doesn't have setup. It doesn't draw itself a card, draw you a card to replace itself. It only gives the Renown during one challenge. And it actually costs a gold. It just really doesn't do much. It certainly doesn't do anything I'm really needing in Targ, I don't think. Not well enough, anyway.
Yeah, maybe there's a possibility for some conquest or alliance or something action to put it on somebody kind of worthwhile, but I don't know. You know, we were just talking about attachments and whether they're going to see play and how they really have to be worth it. And I just don't think that this really meets that criteria.
Yeah, it really doesn't have too much going for it. I think we can pretty safely say that and rate this sucker.
watch Tark get a card that's like, characters with power icons don't kneel to attack or something, and then we're like, oh, it's kind of good now. All right, if you had to rate it, what would you give it, Kyle?
I'm just going to give it a C.
Okay. Will?
A C? Wow, that seems so generous. I don't want to really be playing this in my decks. So I'm feeling about a D minus for Tokar, or Tokar, or wherever I should put the emphasis.
Man. There's just... Yeah, even with, like, out-of-house stuff or something, like, I just don't see it making it. Maybe there's more support for it, but as of right now, I just got to give it an F as far as attachments go. You know, you have to have a pretty serious effect in the current meta right now to be worth playing. And as that stands right there, I don't see it. I mean, I get maybe make your Mad Huntsman. Maybe you're doing like a crazy Heir to the Iron Throne infamy. No, okay, never mind.
Yeah.
So, yep. All right. Will, you want to throw the next one at us?
Yeah, I think I can. Now we get to move on to neutral. This is Shagwell. We've seen him spoiled in an article before, but here he goes. 2 cost, 2 strength, military and intrigue. He's a fool and a mercenary. He has prized 1 and deadly. And if you're running the neutral faction house card, Shagwell gains response. After you play a mercenary character, choose and kneel a non-army character. Limit once per round. I mean, he's kind of a unique neutral castellan. Neutral only, I guess, castellan. It's a pretty strong effect. And I do like 2 drops of deadly like that.
Yeah, not to mention that art rules.
Yeah, it is pretty sweet with the 2 heads he's holding and everything. Yeah. And prize 1's not too bad. You know, he is a unique character, so that feels more justifiable to me than some of the others, even though I'm not sure who is prizing him. But still, he's alright. Looks like they're going to be pushing some kind of neutral mercenary deck, which could be kind of fun as a new theme. There's certainly some mercenaries in the game right now. Now, some of them are house only that I would really want to get into, like the Long Lances, so that's not going to work, but we'll see.
Just him and Disgruntled Mercs, I think, could be pretty awesome. Because he's a response, he's having a limited response. So if you did some kind of weird rainbow thing running it and the castellan, like, Zemish could really start going down.
Yeah.
Even by himself. 2 for 2, deadly, like, that's all good. Mercenary trait kind of freaks me out a little bit. Better than that, solid.
Yeah. I mean, there could be some fun to be had. I like the idea of the neutral faction house card getting some love there. And hopefully this is a precursor of things to come. And the neutral house becoming, or the neutral faction house card, rather, becoming more of a thing in a balanced manner, hopefully. I like him. I think he's decent. I don't think he's necessarily going to break the back of anybody, but hey, he triggers himself when you play him, so booyah!
Yeah, he does indeed.
So a little spot control there, maybe at just the right time. Maybe you have to kneel a pain-in-the-ass character or something. Could be worth it. I mean, right now, if you're making a neutral faction deck, there's no reason not to put him in there.
Yeah, Lannister pays an extra goal and doesn't get the deadly, even if he just triggers off himself once. So to put that perspective of a similar ability.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a better, more cheap enemy informer.
I mean, you might be a little sad if he gets dissensioned or Sirius Okart comes in and kicks him in the balls. But, hey, you win some, you lose some. You want to rate him?
Sure. Boy. It's kind of tough.
It gets tough. This cycle's very... I think that's a good thing, that yeah, a lot of these cards are tough.
Well, it's because you can tell they're setting up so much more. You know, Shagwell is definitely pushing you into that neutral deck, but it depends on how many other mercenaries we get. You know, neutral's already kind of tempting with, experimenting with the long voyage. So that makes, you know, the attempts to use stuff like Shagwell look better.
Tattered Prince, maybe?
Maybe the Tattered Prince. He's not great, but he is a merc, and he can lower the cost of your other ones, so you got something going there. I still don't feel really, really great about the neutral faction as a whole. So I'm gonna put Shagwell at about a C with the, you know, the caveat that he could go up depending on what kind of, support comes out.
All right. What about you, Kyle? What do you think?
Well, I think about what I would give the enemy informer if it was coming out, and I think that's at least a B. I think he's better than that, so I'm giving him at least a B plus.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and... Oh, jeez. I'm going to give him a C. Just because if he was non-unique, then, you know, he's totally a Castellan, and you get more out of him. But since he's unique, you kind of... I think he's going to be more of a one-trick pony more often than not, but maybe not. But I think he's solid. I mean, that could be some great spot control in the neutral faction house card decks. And he's got deadly. What up?
Always got to like deadly.
Always like deadly, especially with an intrigue icon. That's always very nice. All right. Back to me, I think. Yes. All right. Up here we've got... I believe he was spoiled as well. Vargo Hote. He's neutral, unique, 3 cost, 3 strength, military power, a lord and a mercenary, prized 1, and renown. He also has a war crest, and he reads response. After Vargo Hote enters play, choose and kneel any player's house card. You may discard a character agenda from that house card. So... Obviously, the obvious play is to smack somebody's Quentin off their house card or whatever they're running. But hey, what happens if you're in a match where you're running that character agenda and somebody's wrecking your face with Northern Cavalry or they're throwing those fleets in there? Pop them into play, get rid of your agenda. Boom. That might not be the most efficient play ever, but hey, you could do it.
Yeah. I mean, he's got some utility there, like you said, and he's neutral renown at a reasonable price point, which I like. I don't always want that for every deck, but if I, want to use a Warcraft for something in a deck, he slots in pretty nicely there.
and I always like the ability to pick up some extra power.
Kyle, what do you think?
I think it's really... I don't know, character agendas have not seen as much play lately as they once did, but it's a cool card to have in the environment. Makes you think twice about Kindly Man or Quentin or any of that stuff. So I like him. I'm glad he exists. He will probably always be a meta play for me, but or he kind of does feel this mercenary theme. I'm going to give him a B-minus C+.
Mm.
I flipped it that time.
Oh, nice.
That was very nice.
Yeah, so, I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean, I'll give him a C as well. I mean, Renown's nice, Warcrest nice, you know, neutral action going. He's not going to be everywhere by any means, but I think he'll have a place somewhere.
Yeah, he's probably just a C+ for me. He's reasonable. He might make those mercenary decks work some. And if character agendas do get out of hand in your meta, he gives you a good way to tech against that without just being, you know, just a blank silver bullet card in other situations.
All right.
Last one.
Does that fall to me? We have a plot that I really dig. 301, The Lost Message. The Raven trait, prized 1. When revealed, choose and discard an attachment from play. So it makes any house have Mad King's Legacy with 4 stats.
But you get more, Ravens.
Yes, more importantly, this makes the seasonal game, especially with the Kings coming off the restricted list, much more interesting. And I really dig it.
It could be a nice card to kind of have if you're running one of the season agendas. So, I mean, I get it, to ensure that you're not going to be put in that bad position of the opposite season.
Yeah, it could definitely fit in like that. Could fit in some non-target decks that want to be able to just flip a card and control an attachment if something gets out of hand. Giving up that plot slot is, you know, nothing to sneeze at, but I usually don't mind being able to build my plot deck with some kind of, sideboard kind of qualities, since we don't have an actual sideboard in this game. Being able to just have some of those answers I can flip is really nice.
A prized one with only 3 gold, though.
Yeah, 3 gold's a bummer. Tough. And no initiative. Double bummer.
Yeah. I would have really liked to see this at 4 gold. I don't know how much that's going to get played, to be honest with you. I mean, a lot of the decks that are really worried about a season are going to have answers. Spot attachment control in a meta right now that's not playing. I mean, maybe this set is going to have more baller attachments. You know, Needle is pretty good, so maybe we're going to see more to where people will actually seriously consider this card. Hopefully. That'd be nice.
I think you'll see it in seasons a lot. Outside of that, it's going to take you getting boned by something very specific or a very specific build to make me want to run this.
Yeah, it really just depends on your meta, I think. You know, if no one else is playing the seasonal stuff, you don't really care too much about the Lost Message. If there's not some, you know, I don't know, broken deck centering around Snakeskin Veil or whatever the attachment might be, you probably don't care too much about the Lost Message, so... This one's another tough one to rate because it's such a meta call.
Yeah. I'm just going to go ahead and give it a D. It'll come in handy a couple times, maybe.
I think it's still worthy of a pretty solid C. It does what it does and does it well. So if you need it, it slots in great and you're not dealing with a huge downside. It'll just be a question of whether or not you need it.
Yeah, I'll give it a C. Like Will said, I think in seasonal decks, you're going to almost have to run it. And outside of that, it's going to take you being real scared of something specific.
All right.
Yeah.
That's it for the cycle.
Or this pack. We've still
got
a few more to go.
Nope, that's it. It's a special 2-chapter pack cycle. If you agree or disagree with us, please leave in the comments section below on either our Card Game DB post or our Facebook page. We would love to hear from you. Why? If you want to go out there and name specific instances on why you agree or disagree, or maybe you want to go card for card and let us know what your personal preference is. I mean, that's what it's all about. We want to know what you guys think as well. So, I mean, as much as we love to talk to each other and listen to ourselves talk, we want to know how the community feels as a whole so that maybe we can better gauge our choices in the future.
Props and slops?
I had a prop, and I forgot what it was. Give me a prop.
I've got a prop. I do want to throw one out, because it's related to what you were just talking about as far as feedback goes. I actually want to really give a prop out to the listeners. We don't really get much in the way of emails lately, though I do want to give Tim a prop for sending us one. But I think user participation on Facebook and definitely in the comments section on Card Game DB has really been going up and up this year, or at least this season or so, the podcast. And so I want to give some props to people like Bomb and RLX and JC Wama and VS Zeus and OK Targ and... You know what? There's probably a million other people that I'm going to accidentally forget there. So my apologies if I did not mention your board name there, because people have been participating a lot, and I really dig it. It means something to me when there's enough content to actually cause some discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we've always shot for years. It's weird to even say that, for years.
I know, right?
We've been doing this. But we've always shot for getting the community involved, and it's really awesome when you guys, participate. Even if you're telling us that we're morons, like, we like that. We like to hear what you guys think.
I don't know if I like being told.
Well, God, we love it. Yes.
Longship Will's Bane.
Just put it in a vice and just tighten it. Okay. Anyways. I will second that prop. That's a fantastic prop. So, Kyle, you got one for us?
I'm gonna have a slop, and that's gonna be this week's Thrones episode. I don't know, just
too right.
Oh, here it
comes.
I don't
know if it was just the Jaime scene or what, but I just left the scene at the end with Dany saved it, because before that, I just was not feeling it. I don't know why. Was not feeling it.
Yeah, well, and the Tywin Viper scene felt a little weird to me as well. Some of the other stuff was pretty good. I like Pod.
Yeah, Pod was good.
But yeah, should we talk about that Jaime scene?
Dude, it was big enough to... It's been all over, like, the online news headlines and stuff. You know, even George R. R. Martin had to jump in on his blog and just be like, yo, people. And he gave this huge thing on it.
I read that letter. It was kind of weird, because I think if you read between those lines, it was about as close as he can actually get to kind of condemning that scene and saying, you know what, they shouldn't have done it that way.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, he can't really publicly throw that out there.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting the how it does feel like they're going for more of a shock factor now. You know, you just take the momentum from the Red Wedding, and I guess they're just going going for more of that. I'm not really sure why, but
yeah, I mean, it
gets a rise out of people.
That you mentioned the Red Wedding, because I've been, you know, reading up various discussions on this, and you know, like the stabbing of a pregnant woman, and you know, all the murders and the kids pushed out of the tower, and on, like. It's been shocking, but hasn't really seemed to get the rise out of people that this rape did. And let's not forget, Danny was raped in season one by Drogo, which, you know, that played out a little differently than it did in the books. This Jaime Cersei stuff obviously was not like that in the books. So it's just interesting, like, what suddenly tripped everyone's trigger that people are, like, not just shocked, but kind of morally offended at this point, you know? Why now?
Well, I think there's something to be said for the act of rape as a whole. And you're right.
Let's say something to be said against it. I don't think we're going to say things for it.
Well, we are not for it. That's not even a joke that I can make. And you're right. Season one, there was that scene with Danny. But I guess it was just slightly darker in this one. I mean, to be fair, I have not even gotten to see the episode yet. That's how far behind I am. I've gotten to hear about all the aftermath and what, I mean, it's all over the place. But I mean, maybe that's what it was. I'm not really sure. But, there's that saying that even bad publicity is good publicity.
Right.
So maybe that's just the flavor they're going to go with and run with it, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to stop watching over it, though I do have to admit, yeah, for some reason, and I thought about this afterward, I was like, this just feels really weird to me. Like, I feel uncomfortable about this. And none of these other scenes did that to me. Just something about that just feels so, so wrong on a visceral level to a lot of people.
Yeah. Kyle, you got anything to add to that, or you're good?
Oh, I was muted. I'm like, why can't you hear me? Oh, it's not even, like, the scene, like, that. It's just so grossly untrue to the characters. Jaime would never do that. Cersei would never let it happen. Like, she has killed people for less than that.
Well, I think had people someone killed. She hasn't really directly killed anyone.
Sure, but, like, it just is so not true to either of them. And the scene, like, plays out, at least this one was so close to being what it was in the books. I mean, she does protest. Obviously, it's concern of her being caught, not the act of wanting it. And it does change.
Yeah, I got a second vibe in the book.
Right.
Yeah, second read it, and it does. It feels like kind of how it plays out. You're like, okay, Jamie's really forcing this, and she's not so sure, but it very quickly changes into a consensual thing. And, yeah. I mean, I was bothered when the Danny one happened, because in the books, I mean, he asks her.
Yeah.
She's like, yes. Like, I mean, it doesn't get more, like, okay, than that. And that one bothered me, but this one just seems so untrue. Now, I get that you have to split them up. Like, spoilers, Jaime is going to leave King's Landing and is going to forsake Cersei. And that's supposed to happen at this moment. They come together, this is their one intimate moment, and then she gives him the cold shoulder, and he's like, what the hell? We just, like, did it in the Sept. Like, we are, like, what's going on? She's like, and then she has her blow up, and he gets scorned. Well, he's already been back for weeks, however long it's been, and she's already scorned him, and he's obviously fine with it. You have to find some way to drive a wedge between them. So I see that being why this happened.
Yeah, but it shifts that blame, though. You know, in the novels, it's definitely Cersei rejecting Jaime because he's not perfect for her anymore. He's not her dream. And now, I mean, it's very obvious it's going to have to be all Jaime's fault, Cersei scorning and rejecting him because he just did something
terrible, even by Lannister standards. You know, like the Hound mentioned, I think that was in episode 2, right? A man's got to have a code, you know, and
yeah.
And suddenly now we're stuck saying, wait a minute, does Jaime have any code? Which feels so wrong to the character to me, or at least his development in the novels and even in the show up to this point. He started as terrible, and we've been watching him get a little better and a little better. And this is not it. I think part of what makes it feel so different for me is Jamie's been getting better, and suddenly we have this, you know, brand new extreme low point out of the blue. Versus when it happened to Dany in season 1, at least, like, that was her low point. Like, her character arc started with her at the low point. That was when she hit as low as she could go, really, and is climbing back up, you know, to get out to this nice, you know, powerful arc that she has and the growth that she's undergone now, whereas this just sets Jaime back to square one. All this growth he's had is for nothing now.
Maybe even worse. I mean, this is, in a lot of people's eyes, is going to be unforgivable.
Yeah.
And he goes from being in the books as, like, fallen hero with a shot at redemption to find out, you know, who he is and what he wants to be. And, like, almost, and you root for him. You genuinely root for him after he comes back from Harrenhal. And now, if they play it off like nothing ever happened, then the message is rape doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't even know how you can just play that off now.
Yeah, so it's either that or he's stained for the rest of the show. He will always be a villain of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. Worse than the Kingslayer in some regards, you know, because you find out a justification for that action, you know, that makes sense. He would, you know, spoiler alerts here for the novels, or season 3 if you haven't seen it by now, you know, he's making a choice between the lesser of two evils here and tried to save as many people as he could, and he's reviled for the evil he did choose, but here, It is just an evil. I can't comprehend any justification. No one was saved. There was no other good that comes of it. It is just evil. And that's sad.
I don't know how they flip it. I don't know if you continue that scene and it turns into something. Like they kind of end it in the middle. And if you look at wording-wise what she says, I don't know how, but you could maybe drudge this back to the she turns and gives in.
The director has said by the end it's consensual, but in the cut that I watched that aired on HBO, I saw nothing consensual.
No, she's almost sobbing at the end. Like, there's nothing there. This was fudged up. This was a big blunder. And it's going to be very hard to fix this.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's part of the reaction, too, is, you know, up till this point, they've done such a good job and haven't had these kind of blunders. And then suddenly here we are, you know, almost 4.5 seasons in, and suddenly they drop a deuce, so to speak. And that just feels really bizarre.
I'll give them a week or two. I'm curious to see how it plays out. I'll give them a week or two to show me why things were the way they were. And if I don't have answers, I know, but if I don't have, I'm just very nervous, and but I give them the benefit of the doubt for the next 2 weeks and hopefully can come away with some kind of answer on why the change was there. But right now, horrible mistake.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to see how Hollywood works. Maybe, they want to really make people think negatively on Jaime and then build him up in more of the Hollywood style for people to get behind him. I don't know.
I don't know how he will always be from here on out the rapist. I just don't see how you recover from that. It would take a lot.
Yeah. Well, I remember what my prop is, though. going to a slightly lighter note. I am propping the Hex MMOTCG. It is kind of a prop and a slot mixed together because I'm super excited about the game. I got to play it last year at Gen Con, and it was a blast. And I've been they've moved into closed beta, and I've been eagerly awaiting my beta code. Yeah. And I really, really want to play this game. And slops to you, Rings, if you're listening to this episode, because you lost your... Like, he got a new computer, and I guess he lost his beta key, so he can't play now.
Oh, no.
And honestly, it's kind of funny, but I didn't have a beta key to begin with. Well, he had an alpha key, I guess, or something like that. But anyways, so I haven't gotten to play it. I really want to. If you're curious as to what it is, it's very much like Magic, except for there are effects in the game that you just can't do in a physical card game, or at least do it very well. So, like, there will be a card, and, like, it gets minus one strength, and every copy of it in the deck gets minus one strength or something like that. Like, just kind of crazy stuff that you would do in digital card games that you can't do in physical card games. But it's super cool, and they have, like, an MMO is how they market it as like, an MMO because there's PvE stuff that you can do. I really don't know that much more in-depth about that. All I know is that mechanically it was really fun when I got to play it. Visually it looks good, and I'm eagerly awaiting to get in on that beta. So hopefully by the next recording I will have a follow-up prop to go with that after having played it more extensively.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Anything? I think that's a wrap.
I've got one more, though. I'm just going to give a little bit of a prop to the Green Lantern animated series, which has turned up on Netflix. I've been watching that for a while now, about halfway through that first season, and it is way better than it has any right to be. I just kind of started it on a lark, and I suggest people check it out.
Doesn't Nathan Fillion do the voice of the Green Lantern in that?
I think he did in one of the animated movies. I don't believe he does in the series.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I remember seeing his credit for Hal Jordan on something.
Okay. Well, cool. That, I guess, wraps up our episode today. If you would like to give us some feedback and, you know, you want to tell us what you thought about the chapter pack review, or maybe go ahead and weigh in your thoughts about that latest episode, you can email us at 2champs1chump@gmail.com. You can hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/2champs1chump. You can follow us on Twitter, and you can tweet to us. We still pay attention to that, twitter.com/2champs1chump. Or you can, is there anything I'm missing here?
I said email us. MySpace.com at 2champs1chump.
Yeah, MySpace. LinkedIn. You can hit us up on LinkedIn.
not so much, but.
Google Plus. If you want to Google Plus us. YouTube. Or Twitch.
We still need to do a little more of the video stuff, but they do exist.
We do. We have plans. Hopefully, we're just, you know, there's so much to do, so little time.
Yeah.
Or you can just comment on the episode at the Card Game DB slot. So feel free. We would love to hear from you. And I guess we're just going to the Danger Zone!
The ghost who never